ESPN Pensacola. It's home to a lot of things, home to a lot of sports programming. But one of those things is the College Try Podcast with yours truly, your host, Austin Price. Episode 21 of the College Try Podcast. How about that? You can find this episode of the College Try Podcast and all of the 20 previous ones on our local podcast page at ESPNPensacola.com. Also got some other podcasts there, such as War Eagle Weekly, The Glass Half Full with Jordan Glass, so on and so forth. Not only that, but if you want to listen to ESPN Pensacola Radio live, you can find it on 99.1 FM, 1330 AM, or on your ESPN Pensacola mobile app. All right, we're going to dive right in. We actually have a pretty loaded slate. You know, you would expect as we get further and further into this postseason and the games become more and more few and far between, you would expect that I would subsequently run out of stuff to talk about. But we actually do have a pretty loaded slate today once again. So first things first, let's dig into what we took away from these quarterfinal matchups. We'll start with Penn State over Boise State. Going to try to go in order here. Nittany Lions winning 31-14. Can't say I'm surprised by this one. Penn State, obviously the bigger fish on paper, was already battle-tested with an ideal performance against a weaker SMU. But while the convincing result was to be expected, many laid into the Broncos, and particularly star running back Ashton Jeanty, for getting exposed. But I take issue with that. I think that's a bit of an overstatement. For starters, the Broncos were only facing a 10-point deficit entering the fourth quarter. That's two possession. It's definitely not insurmountable. You know, it's a convincing edge, but it's not insurmountable, especially when you got a quarter of game left. Also, Boise State finished with the edge in time of possession, first downs, and total yardage. Speaking of yardage, that's what brings us to Jeanty. He finished the day with 104 rushing yards, almost 140 in total. And that doesn't sound like some bum getting exposed to me. People were acting like, oh, Jeanty played some real big boy competition, and he just got shut down. Hitting the century mark on the rushing game and finishing with almost 140 yards in total to your name on the night, that is not getting shut down. That's not getting decimated. And he was getting a lot of yards after contact, which is what he's infamous for doing. And mind you, Penn State went to some pretty severe lengths to try to limit his rushing attack. You're acting like one Penn State Nittany Lion defender touched him and then Jeanty just snapped in two. That's not what happened. He's dragging players with him, fighting for extra yardage. They're bringing multiple defenders inside, just trying to stuff him up, do what they can. They were going out of their way to stifle him, and he still finished as well as he did on the stat sheet. I mean, in all honesty, the main thing that stood out to me as a dagger for the Broncos and Jeanty was their turnovers. They had four, and Jeanty was partially responsible for that, and that's almost – they almost turnovers almost always fall on the offense making mistakes. Let's be real here, right? Sure, the defense can show up for a big play or two, but the offense, especially when it comes to fumbles, man, that's a lot of control on you. That's a lot of awareness of where you're going to be getting attacked from and just making sure you're holding on to the rock. So in conclusion, Boise State was in a winnable game three quarters of the way through. Their star running back broke the century mark in the game, and a lot of their inability to keep up fell on opportunities that they themselves were most responsible for missing. To me, that sounds like it could have gone far worse for some little guy that was allegedly doomed to be dismembered. That's the thing. People talked about Boise State as if, yeah, they're cute, but they're going to get decimated in the playoffs. And then you got these casuals looking at the final score, and they're thinking, oh, yeah, they got beat up. No, come on. Let's be fair here. Were they outclassed? Yes. Were they outplayed? Yes. But let's slow down on getting beat up, or not deserving an opportunity, or not standing a chance, never having a chance, getting exposed, all those talks. Come on, give it a rest. This is another story, speaking of underdogs and them trying to prove their worth. This is one that I loved. Texas over Arizona State, 39-31 in double overtime. Keeping with the theme of respectable running back performances as well, we have how well Cam Scataboo did. Sun Devils did phenomenally against Texas under his leadership. I think this game mainly showed us three things. One, why Cam has that ego that he's got. Scataboo, I like him. America likes him. But you can tell he plays with a chip on his shoulder. He kind of talks that talk. He'll mean mug you. You know, he talks his stuff, flaunts his stuff. You can tell he thinks a lot of himself. But now we know that it's on good authority. Not only that, we also learned why teams like ASU deserve an opportunity in the college football playoff. As I said just a moment ago, wasn't this a schmuck? some team that's just happy to be here? And look at how they did against an SEC team that now makes up 1/4 of the remaining squads. Not only that, but this also shows that the Longhorns are quite possibly the weakest team remaining in the bracket. Speaking of those SEC teams and how great they aren't, Texas just, I'm sorry, they haven't wowed me. We'll get more on that later, though. I don't say that as a knock on the Sun Devils when it comes to the Longhorns being more limited, because they are clearly a well-coached team that pulled no punches. But let's be real, Texas had a convincing edge in this game at one point, and one could perhaps argue that they should have ran away with it. And they were supposed to, right? You're the runner-up in what's supposed to be the mightiest conference, far and away. ASU, they got in on an auto bid. They fed on the weak in some terrible Big 12. Texas is supposed to humble them, but they didn't. Instead, they blew a convincing lead late, couldn't get out of their own way, most notably in regards to their penalties and special teams troubles. And it was to such a ridiculous degree that ASU not only kept their chances alive, but they were actually in position to win a time or two. I know they made their own mistakes too, and UT deserves credit for capitalizing on them. But when Arizona State is the analytical underdog, and as I said, they got in on that auto bid for feeding on the weak, you know, as a Big 12 conference champ, who cares about that? You would expect them to do worse. Also, their talent's worse on paper. So you would expect them to play more mistake-riddled, be more out of their element, and be more spastic, quite frankly. So this game should not have come down to being as nearly as close as it was, but Texas laid an egg anyway. When you put that on top of them really failing to wow anyone in the Clemson win, they seem like they're going to have to kick it up a notch if they want any chance of making it past the Buckeyes. You're listening to the College Try Podcast every week, back to Tuesdays, by the way. How about that? Right here on ESPNPensacola.com, you can find this episode of the College Try Podcast, obviously, but also all previous ones on our local podcast page at that very same site. And you can listen to ESPN Pensacola on 99.1 FM, 1330 AM, or on your ESPN Pensacola mobile app. Now, getting back to the Buckeyes, because I just mentioned them, they are next up on our quarterfinal performance review. Ohio State beat Oregon 41-21. I know I'm going to sound like Captain Obvious here, but man, I got to tell you, the Buckeyes are far and away the best team in the playoff. One could argue that they looked the best after the first round, but golly, to face an unbeaten Oregon team and not only drop 34 on them, but to do so in the first half before they even get on the board? That's unbelievable. And honestly, it's inexcusable when taking on a team you've already beaten. But hey, I don't want to rag on the Ducks too hard, because I genuinely do feel that this result says more about the Buckeyes' greatness than anything else. So I know that it's pathetic the Ducks beat the Buckeyes and we're just getting manhandled like they were. But this is a pro-OSU moment. This is not an anti-Oregon moment. You can't take anything away from Oregon. They beat OSU the first time. They beat Penn State in the Big Ten title game. Penn State's also in the Final Four, as we've already discussed. They were unbeaten, undisputed top team, top ranked, top seeded, coming into this bracket. First year in the Big Ten. And that is something you cannot take away from them. You shouldn't want to take away from them. Ohio State's just looking that phenomenal. And I do know it's a tall order to beat a team like Ohio State once, much less twice. But I also like, and I'm sorry, I got to say it. I also like how this serves as yet another instance of blowouts being something that can spawn from any given playoff matchup. This once again reminds people who whine about the teams that got in to go away. I mean, I'm sorry, but the people who say, well, I just want the best games. Well, no one predicted 34-0 in the first half of this game, with the number one unbeaten team being on the losing end of it especially. No one predicted that. All right? And you can't predict it. I know it's a tired point, but I just can't pass up the opportunity to say I told you so. My ego's too big for that. Last but not least, we have Notre Dame beating Georgia 23-10. This is an interesting one, too. Simply put, wow. I mean, really, this one stunned me. I knew the Dogs were running on a backup QB in Gunnar Stockton, but with him managing well enough to help his guys escape Texas in their rematch, and with the Irish being one of the lesser proven teams in the dance, I truly thought the potential was there for Georgia to find a way out of this one. But they didn't. Congrats to Notre Dame, I guess. And I'm sorry if me saying it that way comes off as doubtful. I just don't know what to make of them. I don't know what to make of their competition up to this point. To be honest, the questionability of their gauntlet kind of aligns rather well with that of Penn State. And that's actually a good thing because from an indifferent fan's perspective, that means their upcoming date in the Orange Bowl should be all the less predictable. And that's what you want. But before we get to the predicting, there's just a couple of trending topics I want to touch on very quickly. This is the stuff I was talking about where it's like, hey, you'd think Austin would run out of material, but no. One of them is Lane Kiffin. I hate this guy, but I got to give him credit because he does give me a lot of that material I'm talking about. Simply put, Lane is still talking, and the bulk of college football fans still aren't caring. I mean, this guy, okay, so he got on his little soapbox when Miami was ahead of Ole Miss late in the season, and he was talking about, oh, you're just trying to make the ACC feel relevant. And then he talked his talk when it came to some of those first-round teams getting beat up, like Indiana and SMU. Well, during the Gator Bowl, he mentioned sending a message about facing the ACC. That's what he said. I think it was going into the fourth quarter, if memory serves me. He made a remark about, yeah, we're trying to send a message with how we play today because they beat Duke 52-20. He's like, yeah, we want to send a message with how we play today and how we line up against the ACC. And it was like, oh, okay, Lane. And it's like, shut up, all of you. Anyone who's trying to make some hype out of this, it's ridiculous. You beat a Duke team that was good, not great to begin with. And it was missing their starting QB. Duke was missing Malik Murphy. And you beat the snot out of them? And you want love for that? Try again. Nobody cares. All he can do is talk about how sorry the ACC is when held next to the mighty SEC. But when people know he's only riding on that to justify losing to Kentucky, they understandably find it quite difficult to keep interest. And I'm one of those people. By the way, you know what else makes it difficult to take him seriously? The SEC getting skunked by the Big Ten left and friggin' right, whether it be Tennessee falling to OSU, Alabama falling to Michigan, Texas A&M falling to USC, South Carolina falling to Illinois. Sounds like a lot of material there, right? But Lane never touches on any of that. Interesting. It's so pathetic. The SEC is a great conference, don't get me wrong, but on an annual basis, you have people acting like it's some untouchable slash insurmountable force. But on that same annual basis, you also have multiple holes to poke into that argument. I mean, for example, I've got a script here that I'm trying to follow, but I'm going to go off it for a minute because I want to prove my point. People are going to sit here and say that this is just a down year for the SEC. And it is. Regardless of whether or not you think it's the new norm, regardless of whether you think this or that brought on the down year, I don't care. It is a down year for the SEC. I will concede that. But if you don't want me to bring up this year, it's okay, I won't. One of the biggest arguments against Florida State for not making the playoff last year was, oh, well, their strength of schedule has to matter. It's like, you do understand that they played a 9-win Clemson on the road, beat them, ranked Louisville, 10-win Louisville, neutral site, beat them by double digits. And they also faced, here's the dagger, two SEC teams, neither of which were in Tallahassee, one of which was, I think, a 9-win LSU, with a Heisman-winning quarterback, Jaden Daniels. Florida State won each of those games by multiple possessions, and they beat LSU by like over 20. Oh, but that doesn't matter, right? The SEC is so mighty, and Florida State beat the snot out of them, beat up on them twice. Oh, but that doesn't matter. Your strength of schedule still stinks. We don't want to talk about those SEC losses. Interesting. I'm a Wake Forest fan. I've said that a few times throughout this season. We paid $1 million. To get out of a rematch with Ole Miss. I don't appreciate that. I don't condone it. But people were like, oh, yeah, Wake Forest is afraid of the SEC. And I got to tell you, I don't know what other reason there is, but I'll tell you this much right now. Coming into this season, Wake had won like their last four games against the SEC. We won our last three, I think, by double digits. That's regular season. That's postseason. That's multiple different programs. Wake also had a perfect record against Ole Miss, I believe, coming into this year, because of a couple of matchups we had back in the 2000s. So if you want to talk numbers, if you want to talk results, recent memory dictated that, if anything, the SEC should have been afraid of Wake. And I think I've said that earlier this year when it was a trending story. But the thing is, if you think that's laughable, take it up with the SEC and the fact that they got beat up by Wake all those times. As I said, they always want to talk about head-to-head. They always want to talk about eyeball tests. They always want to talk about toughness. But they never want to talk about it when they're on the losing end. And that is what upsets people. I think this down year that we're seeing right now is just the boiling point for a lot of people, and they're putting their feet down. Lane probably thinks he's combating that movement with this inconsistent whining where he only talks about what the SEC does well and not what it does badly. But no, he's become the top reason behind why it even exists. And the fact that he is still too stupid to realize it is stunning. It's unbelievable. I do want to talk a bit more about the alleged weakness of the ACC, though, as that conversation is catching some more steam here lately, and it's not because of what Lane has been spouting. Rather, it's because the ACC didn't look so hot this postseason. This was the other thing I wanted to touch on, the other main thing at least. The ACC went 2-11 in the postseason this year. Yikes. But it's not the end of the world, like what some people are making it out to be. I am going to get on a soapbox here for the ACC, and not just because I root for an ACC team. Wake Forest didn't even make a bowl, so you can expect me to be as objective as possible here. For starters, 13 teams going to a postseason game is 13 teams going to a postseason game. That's impressive no matter what. You're still producing a lot of depth. You're proving a lot of depth by that many teams getting that kind of opportunity. Of those 13 teams, you had two playoff teams, and both lost to current contenders. You didn't lose to Indiana. You didn't lose to Georgia with a backup QB. You lost, if you're Clemson, you lost to Texas. If you're SMU, you lost to Penn State. On the road, by the way. Both of those teams make up half of the Final Four. So you're not losing to schmucks here. You also had several teams finish with 9 wins or more. We're not talking about 10 or 11 teams in the ACC going 6-7. Miami finished with like 10 wins. Louisville, 9 wins. Duke, 9 wins. Syracuse, 10 wins. A lot of the bowl losses that we saw the ACC have were competitive. They were decided by single digits. So not all of the showings were so bad, especially when you remember how it was evident that the ACC was in for a dip of its own quite early into the season. We saw Clemson get blown out by Georgia. We saw FSU's downfall early. We saw, and they never recovered. We saw Va Tech lose to Vandy. We saw NC State's ugly first few weeks. Those were guys that were supposed to be competitive in the ACC, and they crashed and burned early. I mean, they didn't even really get much of a chance to stand out. So we knew this was going to be a down year for the ACC. We know it's a weaker league already. To have all those teams make it, with how several of them did, with who some of those teams lost to, it could have gone a lot worse. It went bad, but it could have gone a lot worse. It's not the season you hoped for, not the finish you hoped for, but you'll live. You're listening to the College Try Podcast. Once again, want to remind you that weekly, we're back on the Tuesday schedule now. We kind of fluctuated a bit there, but we're back on Tuesdays. Right here on the local podcast page, ESPNPensacola.com, you can find this episode of the College Try Podcast, all previous ones on that local podcast tab, along with other podcast episodes. You can also listen to ESPN Pensacola live on 99.1 FM, 1330 AM, or on your ESPN Pensacola mobile app. Now, let's get predicting all two of our remaining games. Golly, the season's flown by. First up, I got Penn State beating Notre Dame in the Orange Bowl 27-21. I see this game marching to a similar beat as what I had in mind for the Notre Dame-Georgia game, at least in regards to it being lower scoring. Obviously not as little scoring as what we got from a damaged Georgia, but still. It'll be physical, hard-nosed, old-school driven football, being less reliant on looking to make the exciting plays, more reliant on controlling the flow of the clock and keeping a rhythm as you nickel and dime your way down the field, as I like to say. As far as whether both teams will be going for that approach, I'm not as certain, but I just know that Penn State has proven an ability to compete with big boy competition in both offensive and defensive settings. You can see that in their games against Oregon and Ohio State. I mean, Oregon, what was the final score of that game? 45-37 on a neutral field. Penn State and Ohio State, I want to say the score was around 20-13, right? It was a touchdown game, low scoring. I mean, so they can keep with you offensively, defensively, and I see Notre Dame giving them more of the latter. I see them being more defensively driven when considering how they've done in the bracket so far. But I think the Nittany Lions are good enough that they'll be able to come out on the winning end of the deal this time around. And that's the Thursday game. As for on Friday, I got Ohio State downing Texas in the Cotton Bowl 41-30. As you can probably tell by the score, I have this game being the exact opposite of everything I just said about the Orange Bowl. High-powered offenses, high intensity. Both teams likely getting on the board early. It should come as no surprise that I have Ohio State pulling away, though. Not just with what I said about them earlier and what I said about Texas earlier, but if you just watch these two teams play, I mean, there's simply no team – that has come within striking distance of the Buckeyes recently. And I don't mean just on the scoreboard. In their games, in this bracket, you've seen wide open targets. You've seen unchallenged runs up the sideline. You've seen an offense that doesn't just have the craftiness to outwit you, but the speed to exhaust you. As I said before, I don't think the beatdown of Oregon was some expose of the Ducks, but a testament to the strength of these Buckeyes. And I don't see the Longhorns keeping up with that. I do see them putting up some points, though, because I am nonetheless pleased with how they've done so on Clemson and Arizona State. But with how you were in a close game with the Tigers late, I want to say that was a one-score game going into the fourth, or early in the fourth, whatever. I don't like that. With how you let the Sun Devils get back in their game, I don't like that. I see those struggles joining forces with OSU's offensive masterclass, and it's going to create the perfect storm for ensuring a Texas loss. I mean, you remember that scene from The Wizard of Oz when DeKal's in the tornado? Yeah, just replace that fella with Bevo. that'll sum it up for you. My goodness. All right, you've been listening to the College Try Podcast. We're back on the Tuesday schedule. Tonight's Tuesday, January 7th, so I'm going to be back on Tuesday, January 14th. We're coming down to the final stretch. As I said early on here tonight, we've got only a couple games left, and it's unbelievable that the college football season is already so close to a thrilling conclusion, or at least what we hope is thrilling. But we'll just tackle it every step of the way as we have so far. I'm Austin Price. It's the College Try Podcast right here on ESPNPensacola.com. We'll see you next week.